Good morning. It's 10 minutes after 7 o'clock. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, and I'm Gene Purcell. I'm in this week for Joy Cardine. When it comes to talk of education, few topics seem more controversial than No Child Left Behind, the federal program backed by the Bush administration that, among other things, requires regular testing of students to meet certain achievement goals. A study released this week by the Center on Education Policy indicates that those achievement numbers have gone up since No Child Left Behind was enacted. It also indicates that the test score gaps between different groups of students have narrowed. Backers of No Child Left Behind say it's proof that the program is working, but even the authors of the study say that they can't draw a correlation between the new test results and No Child Left Behind. Those numbers and what they actually mean are sure to be the subject of a great deal more controversy, and we'll try to sort it all out with our guest this hour. Steve Correa is an assistant professor of teacher education at St. Norbert College in De Pere, and we'll try to get some insight into the question of whether No Child Left Behind should really get the credit. It's your chance to weigh in, too. Let us know what your questions about the study are and whether you think No Child Left Behind is just rhetoric or a real tool that can improve the state of education. If you're calling toll-free, our number is 800-642-1234, or if you're calling from the Madison area, it's 263-1890. Steve Correa, good morning, and welcome to Wisconsin Public Radio.
Good morning. Very nice to be here.
Well, I want to start with just a bit of history. No Child Left Behind. I said in my introduction that it is controversial, and certainly that's true if you read the press accounts. But I'm wondering, within the industry, within education, how controversial is it?
Well, I think that teachers and school districts are slowly getting used to it. It is a way, it is a change of doing business for a lot of schools. Teachers have always looked much more holistically at student achievement, student performance, and this has narrowed the focus specifically to reading and math performance. And so I think in those two specific ways, schools have become much more effective zeroing in on those two distinct areas of academic performance, reading and math. And I've been reading about school districts. The Beloit School District has pep rallies about testing and standardized testing and motivating the students to do well. And certainly reading specialists have become almost godlike in a lot of districts because they know how important they are to overall school performance. So in those two areas, attention has gone, resources has gone, have been devoted. And certainly the evidence shows in the last 4 or 5 years with this analysis of data across the nation that there have been gains in those particular two particular areas. I think what you did very well in your introduction was you used two words that are really helpful to be able to discern some subtleties here. You used the word indication, which, of course, we don't really know. The report itself went to great lengths to say, we're not saying No Child Left Behind caused this. We're just saying that we compiled this data, we analyzed this data, and this is the outcome. So they're not saying that this definitely resulted in this. It's sort of like most people might be aware, Buicks are a very safe car to drive. However, does that mean that Buicks are the absolute safest car to drive? No, it means that most people that drive Buicks don't drive fast and they don't get in accidents. Does that make Buicks the best car? Maybe. So we don't necessarily know. It's a correlation, but we don't know if it's a causation. And so I think that those two subtleties are very important to be able to mention with this. But schools have focused a lot of attention on this, and this is the outcome of this. So they're doing what's been requested and demanded legally of them. And I think the schools in these areas have responded well, not without some kicking and screaming, because, again, teachers look at things much broadly, much more broadly than just these two areas. However, these are the ones that they need to concentrate on nowadays.
And we're going to get to the results of the test and talk a bit about that study in a few minutes here. But when you were talking about, you know, the words I used, indication and correlations and so forth, the media doesn't always see it that way, though I'm looking at a USA Today headline study, No Child Left Behind Seems to Be Working. The New York Times, new study finds gains since No Child Left Behind. If you didn't get any farther than that, you're looking at this act and you're saying, wow, it's working out really well.
Oh, I think so. And this is what's wonderful about Wisconsin Public Radio. You have more than 30 seconds to be able to digest a complex issue. So people that read headlines get what they deserve. And this gives a chance to give a little bit more reflection to this. So I really think that that's very true. Because up to this point, you're really dealing with a lot of press releases and people that perhaps might be oriented one way or another. Now, just the flip side of that coin, some California newspapers ran headlines that were almost the opposite. They noted that for specific groups, some Hispanic groups and students with special needs, they were able to determine that the gap has increased, their performance gap from 2002 to 2007. And so that's interesting that it just depends kind of where you are in the nation and the particular needs and importance that you place on particular groups. Nonetheless, the study is correct in broadly across the nation. These things are improving. But again, the subtlety of how the report was compiled, and just to take a minute to go into that, this is very tricky stuff. We have 50 states, the District of Columbia. We have almost 50 different tests, 50 different ways to measure math and reading performance. So what I think the authors of this study deserve a lot of credit for is, and they wanted to maintain their credibility. They got burned about a year ago with overstating some things. They've really tried to say, we don't know if this caused this. I know we talked about that earlier. But what they're trying to say is that we analyzed all of the states individually, looked at their performance individually, and these are some broad performance indicators that we have. However, it might be better teaching. These might be pre-No Child Left Behind programs that were put in place. It might be that the students are better at taking tests. We might be teaching to the tests, which, by the way, a lot of supporters of No Child Left Behind will say, properly so, if it's a good test, that's a good thing to do.
Well, let's take a break here. We've got lots to talk about, and I do have to pause for just a moment. We're talking about No Child Left Behind, a study out this week, and the test results are factoring into this discussion. And Steve Correa is our guest, an associate professor of teacher education at St. Norbert College in De Pere, and we're trying to figure out what it all means. I'm Gene Purcell in for Joy Cardine here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. 18 minutes past 7 o'clock, this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up after 8, the G8 Summit opened up in Germany yesterday amid much protest, and we'll be talking about the purpose of the summit and what is likely to be accomplished after 8 o'clock. This hour, we are talking about No Child Left Behind. A survey out this week indicates that students around the country are gaining in certain areas of achievement and that certain gaps between different groups of students are narrowing. And it's all happened since the implementation of No Child Left Behind. But we're trying to figure out whether No Child Left Behind really had a hand in that. Steve Correa is our guest this hour, an associate professor of teacher education at St. Norbert College in De Pere. And before the break, Steve Correa, we were talking about those study results and what they might mean. And I want to talk briefly about the group Center on Education Policy and just get your take on their role in all this. A lot of people will look at groups and say, well, they take one side, they take the other side. This study is suspect. What should we think about a study from this center?
I think that the center has gone to great lengths to try to have credibility that their results are statistical and not political. Now, Polybius said in the end, all things are political, and I think this certainly is a very political document. But I think that the center does deserve credit for really trying to report data in a very straightforward way without, again, lauding or trumpeting the work of the federal government or No Child Left Behind. So I did try to do some research on this group. They are fairly well received. They do seem to be, I mean, they have some people that have some political background, but of course it's in Washington, or you know, you would expect that to be.
Oh, yes.
But they don't seem to lean strongly to the right, and so I think that they have some credibility, and I think, again, they deserve a lot of credit for being able to put these caveats. The fact that people haven't responded to the caveats, actually even the New York Times buried those type of reporting in there to say we're not specifically sure. The Los Angeles Times did the same. The Washington Post also have those caveats in there. They don't quite scream to the headline because that's not going to catch people's eye. But I do think that this report deserves respect and deserves, I think, people to be able to say, okay, now what is going on? And this was a large, large challenge to be able to understand and interpret this data from all these reporting stations around the nation, all these different school districts, you know, the State Departments of Education. And again, no one has really tried to do this, but we haven't had this opportunity before. It's really only been since 2002 that specific data in math and reading has been collected around the nation systematically. And even at that, as I said, we have 50-plus different measures within those states. But at least now within the states, we do have reliable and valid data to show students' performance on math and reading, and those didn't exist. So that, I think, No Child Left Behind deserves a lot of credit for. Now, that doesn't mean some states weren't doing this. They were, but not in the systematic way across the nation. Now, we have this pesky little thing called the 10th Amendment.
Oh, yes.
And that's powers reserved to the states, for those that were awake in social studies class in 10th grade. And what we do with that is that causes this real problem between the federal government and the states. And we have this tussle back and forth. Some people might remember Peg Lautenschlager filed suit in 2004 that this was unconstitutional grab by the federal government on state responsibilities. Well, nonetheless, No Child Left Behind has provided this, but it has allowed the power to reside in the states for decision-making on what types of assessment they're going to collect, and also how individual states measure students' performance. So we still really can't measure a student's performance in New York versus students' performance in Wyoming. They're two different tests. They have actually two different measures of how we measure proficient and how we measure advanced. So the bar is very different. The testing instruments are very different. So we're not there yet. And I think as long as the 10th Amendment exists in the courts, we're probably not going to get to a national test, which really would result in a national curriculum. And again, I don't think that's going to happen. But No Child Left Behind has provided this framework, and at least within individual states, there can be this way to track students' performance. And we're not hiding students anymore. All students, almost all students, are taking these tests. And I think No Child Left Behind has really shined a light on student performance across the board. And so districts have had to devote resources to this. And this is the result.
Let's get some listeners into the conversation right now, because people do want to talk about this. If you'd like to join in, it's 800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Amy joins us now from Milwaukee. Good morning, Amy.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm actually driving to work. I'm a public school teacher and Milwaukee Public Schools. I want to start with the analogy. You can't fatten a pig by weighing it. And the focus on testing within this act has really, I have to wonder, when test scores go up, you have to ask yourself, what have schools sacrificed to get those high scores? We no longer have music. We no longer have art. We have shortened recesses. And I've read all about accounts of schools teaching to the test. And what really concerns me as well, the testing industry is a $1 billion industry, yet there's no independent body that looks at those tests and asks, are these fair tests? Are these tests developmentally appropriate? Are they the best measure? And with the focus on gathering and collecting data, we're losing kids. And in fact, some schools have decided to drop students off the rolls if they know that, like within Texas with Rod Page, his shining example in Houston, come to find out, you know, they had more dropouts than any district in the nation, and they were getting rid of students who weren't doing well on the tests. And to me, this focus on data gathering and when your guest said that this is valid data, I cringed, because unless you're in the classroom and unless you see these tests, every year they change. I've been teaching for 6 years, and my kids had done very well in the reading in the past, and then it seems like as soon as they start doing well, the test changes, and they make it harder. And so it seems to me they keep raising the bar. And then within the law, there's a stipulation that by the year 2014, every child should be 100% proficient, or every school is going to be failing. And I just think that's ludicrous, because it seems like it's setting up public education for failure. And also built within this law is the voucher provisions. And to me, there's an agenda behind this, I believe, and I don't think it's best for my students. I've had to pass out more test booklets than I ever have. We have benchmark tests now in MPS so that we can focus on what we need, the strands, so that we can do better on the tests. And yet we're losing arts, and we're losing things that educate the whole child and make the child feel good and the great equalizers. And I just think this focus on data gathering is not the best for the children.
Amy, thanks for the call. Oh, sure. And Steve Correa, there's one educator anyway who embodies, I think, a lot of the controversy in her statements there. And let's start with the one about the test. When you teach to the test, when you're gathering data, do you lose things in other parts of a child's education? Or do you have to, or is that just the way it is sometimes?
Oh, she's such a wonderfully informed educator, really keeps up with current events, too. So it's sort of a nice educational policy class. One of the things that I would mention is that as we're talking about testing, one of the professions that has emerged, it's always existed, this deals with testing, is the field of psychometrics, and that's the measurement of intellectual performance. And it's become a huge field. She is absolutely right. The testing field is very unregulated. She probably has watched the PBS work, and I think Frontline did some very wonderful specials on that. However, much of what the caller said, supporters of No Child Left Behind would say the exact same thing, only in support of. In other words, we are now focusing on what's important. We are now focusing on what we know. We are now focusing on those things that have been overlooked. Now, personally, I happen to think she's very accurate with what she's saying. When we look at testing, yes, that's what I said earlier. The resources have been devoted to that area. Resources, by definition, are limited. Schools only have so much to go around. This is where the focus has gone. So she's exactly right. There haven't been as many resources, because it doesn't exist, going to these more holistic and broader measures. Teachers know this intuitively. People in No Child Left Behind do not like things that can't be measured specifically. And again, we're going with statistical behavioral measurements of student performance. So, the caller is speaking as a dedicated teacher, and one that sounds like quite wonderful. She's also correct in saying things that, the bar has been raised. By 2014, it's 100% of all students are supposed to be at the proficient level. Any statistician will cringe at that number. When I use the terms valid and reliable, I was using those in a statistical sense, not in an anecdotal sense. That means that we now have data that we can trust.
Okay, we've got to take a break, unfortunately. We will pick that thought up when we return from a look at the news, though. So don't lose that thought, Professor.
Yes.
You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. The time is 25 minutes before 8 o'clock. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, and I'm Gene Purcell in for Joy Cardine today. We are talking about the No Child Left Behind Act in the wake of a study that was released this week saying that student achievement across the country has improved, but that study comes with a lot of caveats, namely that you can't necessarily tie those achievements, those increases, to No Child Left Behind. We're talking about the topic with our guest Steve Correa, an associate professor of teacher education at St. Norbert College in De Pere. And before the break, we were talking about the whole idea of the testing data and whether it's valid and reliable. So, Steve Correa, perhaps you could finish that thought.
Certainly, and I love the caller's analogy, kind of homespun there. She said that you cannot fatten a pig by measuring it. But again, the supporters of No Child Left Behind would say this is just exactly what's needed. We need to shine the spotlight on student performance, and then we'll know what we need to do. Now, of course, the detractors, this wonderful classroom teacher, says, boy, there's more to it.
You know, the all kinds of analogies we can do. If we want to lower a person's cholesterol, there's lots of ways to do it. That's very important. Certainly all cardiologists would agree with that. However, we have to look at weight. We have to look at environment, asthma, all these other kind of things. And classroom teachers do that intuitively. They do it by training, and they do it by culture. So classroom teachers know there's more to it. At least that's the kind of teacher I want to work with, and I certainly want my children with. And this classroom teacher does recognize that. One of the challenges, though, is that's not what No Child Left Behind cares about, to be perfectly frank, or has accepted the challenge to be able to measure. No Child Left Behind zeroes in on those. One particular area that we haven't talked about but might be sort of interesting is 10th grade test performance across the nation. The rate of increase has been much, much slower, and the rate of performance is much, much lower. We are phenomenal at elementary schools at increasing students' performance, and the data shows that we do much better every year. As the students get older, the performance decreases. Now, that doesn't mean that the scores are dropping, but the rate of improvement, it gets much, much harder. And again, teachers will tell you that. It's harder to lose weight once you've lost a lot. Mm-hmm. It's harder to do that. So, but again, No Child Left Behind makes no accommodations for differences between 3rd and 10th grade. So it's a very challenging act, and it doesn't allow for a lot of wiggle room. In the reauthorization, that's what some people are requesting. Slang term would be wiggle room. I think we're looking for words like accommodations and changes, sure, and those kind of things. But again, No Child Left Behind has based its strength on the fact that it is a black and white measure, and that's what its credibility is based on also.
Let's find out what listeners think about this topic today. David joins us from South Milwaukee. Hi, David.
Good morning. Thank you, Gene. Forgive me, I haven't been listening to the entire show. I'll try to be succinct. A couple brief comments, one on accountability and one on testing. You know, the No Child Left Behind accountability is at a high level, you hear the word subgroup accountability, and to me that's academic Latin for we can no longer write off kids that smell bad or come in torn or dirty clothes, brown, yellow, red kids. We have to take them all and value them equally, and we're accountable for them. And I think that's for a country that professes the values that we sometimes do on religious political holidays like the 4th of July and Memorial Day, that's what we should be doing, being accountable for every subgroup and not just writing off groups of our population. The other thing I want to speak to is testing. Please teach to the test. Don't test me on something I haven't been taught on. These tests break down learning. It's not just a test on reading or a test on math. It's a test on specific cognitive skills and learned skills. One anecdote. I saw a teacher taught for 25 years at elementary level, had a child that thought really was struggling with reading. As a result of our state reading test, it turned out the kid was a genius at reading nonfiction, and mostly what those kids at that level read are fiction. And she got a whole new world view of this kid. There's a rich area of study where kids who score very poorly in school but turn out to be advanced or proficient on very legitimate tests of the skills that we want them to know. This is an interesting field.
David, thanks for the call. And, Professor, a couple of things there. And one we haven't talked a lot about up to this point is that issue of accountability that David raises towards various subgroups within students.
Absolutely. And, again, No Child Left Behind deserves credit nationally for making this an issue. He's exactly right. 10, 15 years ago, districts were somewhat encouraged to be able to, they encouraged students to not necessarily all show up on certain days, and there's a lot of anecdotal evidence to support that. No Child Left Behind does not allow that. In fact, some schools have been labeled as failing schools, that term that makes everybody cringe, just because they haven't had all of their subgroups show up, Hispanic-speaking students or, you know, whatever kind of subcategories you might be interested in looking at. So, yes, No Child Left Behind, it is a one-size-fits-all. Now, again, that's the same thing. Are we looking at a sunrise or a sunset? If it's no child left, or if it's one size fits all, again, a lot of classroom teachers say, ah, no way, it doesn't work that way. However, No Child Left Behind takes the credit for saying they've all got to perform. And that's what that has done. One thing, though, that No Child Left Behind, and especially in Wisconsin, if we notice, the districts that we thought were doing well before, for the most part, are still doing well. Mequon, Appleton schools, wonderful, strong school districts, they're still doing well. Districts that we had some questions about, now we have more data. And again, in reading and math, notice we're not talking about gym performance, humanistic education, values education, but in reading and math, we now know what those needs are, and districts are responding to address those students' needs. We might look more broadly. Some of us would agree with that. However, No Child Left Behind says no. The resources go to reading and math.
Let's go on with some more callers here, and Samantha is with us from Hortonville. Hi, Samantha.
Good morning. I'm a high school teacher, and I was just thinking of the comment from the speaker that said earlier about the 10th grade achievement being a little bit lower. I think it's because, and I normally teach 10th graders, they really have no incentive for this test. They don't see the purpose in taking it, and there is no motivation. And I know in past, you know, we've given like a half a day off at Thanksgiving or things like that, but a lot of these students for high school age, they're just not motivated to do their best, unfortunately, even though we can watch them. And when they're in rooms of probably maybe 9 or 10 students, so you can kind of keep an eye on it. We have 2 educators per room. But still, again, there's no incentive. And then another thing is for No Child Left Behind to say, you know, how student achievement is rising, I still think it's kind of funny because I still think we lack the funding to really support, you know, the schools in this testing. I mean, I don't think the No Child Left Behind is fully supported with the money that the schools truly need. And I guess just that's my comments, and I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
All right, Samantha. And, Professor, that is something you hear a lot about, No Child Left Behind. A lot of people call it an unfunded mandate.
Oh, and anybody that's surprised that the federal government isn't funding its mandates, yes, obviously. The Americans with Disabilities Act and the schools need to respond to that is a wonderful example. It was originally intended to be nearly 100% funded. In reality, for schools to be able to address the needs of children with varying physical and cognitive needs, we're less than 30% that schools have received that they were promised to be able to institute these programs. So unfunded mandates is a wonderful tradition. She's exactly correct, though. Schools have devoted these limited resources to testing, and there's less to go otherwhere. I really appreciated her comments about 10th grade performance and the challenges with that. Just a quick story about that. In the state of Ohio, when they first started testing high school students, what they decided to do was not test not report scores individually. They reported them for the district, and they told the students that it would be the district scores. Well, they did that 1 year because the students performed so miserably because there was no individual accountability. So we're still trying to figure out how to motivate these high school students. It's not, again, one size fits all, and that's why, you know, school districts like Beloit have done pep rallies. Some districts are spending more time reward mechanisms. And it's a challenge for high schools. It is very much. She's very insightful that way.
We're talking about a test released this week that indicates that student achievement scores across the country are up, and that some of the gaps between various groups of students in public schools are narrowing. And that is good news, of course, and a lot of people are trying to trace that back to the inception of No Child Left Behind. We're talking about whether that is really the case, and rather that's really a case that you can make right now at this point. We'll be continuing our discussion with Steve Correa, an associate professor of teacher education at St. Norbert College, after this break. I'm Gene Purcell, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 12 minutes before 8 o'clock. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, and I'm Gene Purcell, in for Joy Cardine. Coming up after 10, this week marks the 40th anniversary of the Beatles album Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. And after 10, Kathleen Dunn and her guest talk about the album and the Beatles' continuing influence on music and culture. This hour, we are continuing our discussion on education. A study out this week indicates that student achievement scores are up, and the question we're asking is what role No Child Left Behind played in all of this. Let's get back to callers right now, and George joins us from Milwaukee. Hi, George.
Yeah, good morning. Correct me if I'm wrong, there is no national exam that kids take, is there?
Professor, I don't believe there is.
Well, no, that gets back to that old 10th Amendment thing. However, there is a test called the NAEP. It's the National Assessment of Educational Progress, and that's one that is statistically given to representative groups around the nation, and that really is about the only measure that we have that they try to be able to tell from year to year how students are performing in math and social studies. It's a much broader kind of test. In absence of any national tests, that's why incorrectly often ACT and SAT scores are used. But the NAEP, or NAEP, the Assessment of Educational Progress, is really about the only test that exists. And that is, again, given to selective group. It's a statistical sample. And it's fairly respected within education field.
Mm-hmm. I guess I would suggest that it might be better if we move to a system like they have in England, where they have O levels and then the higher A levels, which are national tests. They're not mandated. At least the A levels aren't any. If you want to go onto university, you basically have to get fairly high grades in those. You don't have coercion in that sense. It's just there are tests that are out there. Kids know that they have to pass them simply if they want to gain admittance.
Yes, I think that tradition exists very strongly, very European, very Australian, also New Zealand. That's a very English, Western, British tradition. In the United States, again, we don't do that. Now, perhaps we sort of have a de facto national curriculum in the limited number of textbooks that are distributed nationally and what people use. But in terms of testing and assessment, now we have 50 different ships or 51 going 51 different directions and 51 different measures. And again, supporters would say that's the strength of the United States, local control, local ownership. And, one of the challenges is, though, it's very difficult to get a good picture of what's happening nationally. And again, a lot of supporters of states' rights would say, exactly right. We want to know our state. It's not valid to compare Maine with North Carolina. So good insight, though. That would be one solution to that, yes.
Let's head over to Appleton right now, and Pat joins us. Hi, Pat.
Hello. Mike, I have two comments. The first one is that I think that there are millions and millions of students being left behind, and I think that's because music and art programs are being cut and those things aren't being tested. And I really think that society is being damaged as a result of that. I don't think there's going to be another Mozart. I don't think there's going to be another Da Vinci. I don't think there's going to be people of high quality in the arts just because of the way the educational system has gone. My other comment is that I think that the president, the Congress, and the school boards should all take the test so the kids can compete with them and say, yeah, we did better than they did. I think that would be a better measure of where the bar should be, and I think kids would find it comical to do so much better than the president and the Congress. So I'll hang up and listen. Thanks. Bye.
Pat, thanks for the call. And Professor, sounds like we've got someone who is not a fan of the test there. And she does get at some of the issues we've been talking about, though, those creative things, the arts, the music and so forth, that are difficult to measure. And, how do you get at that in terms of education? Something like No Child Left Behind just simply sounds like it can't really get there.
No, and No Child Left Behind, to its credit, does not try to overreach. It takes these very behavioral measures of reading and math performance and gives you a statistical number as the result of that. We do emphasize in schools these behavioral skills. We don't emphasize humanistic, appreciation for the arts. The humanities are not stressed as a result of this. So she's right. Now, whether or not we won't produce a Mozart which, of course, we never did produce anything like that, but I guess we've had Louis Armstrong, and there's certainly a strong argument there's a correlation there, and other brilliant examples. But again, No Child Left Behind would say, we're not opposed to that. We don't do that. Whether you could blame it on that, I don't know. However, I do think her call for sort of a national mandatory viewing of what every fifth grader knows would be really, really popular. I think that's a Fox television show.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody's quite fascinated because people say, oh, my gosh, I remember what a rhombus was, but I don't remember what exactly that means. And certainly, we do hold children accountable. People that don't think the schools are doing a wonderful job need to go in and say, my gosh, when I was in that grade, I wasn't doing anything close to that. But again, we hold others to different levels than sometimes we hold our politicians. So it's an interesting, certainly, topic for discussion.
Before we leave at the top of the hour, one other thing, we've kind of touched upon it. But overall, how did Wisconsin do in the scheme of things?
Wisconsin did very well. The progress continues to be made. There are districts with some problems. Southeastern Wisconsin continues to have some pronounced educational problems with students' performance, especially as they get older, approaching that 10th grade, mm-hmm. which, again, we've talked about as nationally as an issue. Southwestern La Crosse area had a few issues, but other districts that have had some challenges are getting better at adjusting to the expectations. And so DPI and the school districts deserve a lot of credit. These are the rules that have been imposed on them. And scores are increasing, especially in the elementary school. I mean, very, very noticeably. Now, one of the unfortunate things is by 2014, of course, this has to be up in the high school. But the idea would be that this performance, the students that have done so well in elementary schools, will then continue to matriculate through the system and take their high performance with them. And then when they get in those higher grades, they will then be acclimated to the testing and to the performance. Now, again, our first caller is probably cringing at that. I would be inclined to agree. However, that means then that the argument is that the performance will continue to track higher as these higher performing students move on. And I think elementary schools deserve a lot of credit. They're doing a phenomenal job, and everybody is, we're getting better. Wisconsin does very well. It's a phenomenal state for schooling. I really encourage people to look at other states, and Wisconsin is near the gold standard for education in the United States. It's very strong.
For those districts that aren't doing so well in southeastern Wisconsin and the few over in the southwestern area, what do they need to be thinking about as they try to move forward from this?
It's really a wonderful question. One of the things that they need to think is, and this is challenging because we don't know a lot about this, how do we improve reading scores among older readers? How do we work with middle schoolers and high school students to improve their ability to read and criticize and analyze? We don't have a lot of reading specialists at the high school level. That's one particular area that we're looking at because, again, they go to math, science, social studies, whatever the case. So perhaps those teachers districts need to attend to them to be able to provide them training and background in reading instruction and critical thinking. Math, maybe we need to look at how we organize the math curriculum. What's on the test? Again, since we're testing, what do they need to know? And then how do we then orient the math curriculum? I know that the DePere schools in Brown County have adjusted their math curriculum to be able to have students perform more proficiently on tests, and they've had success in that. So, again, it's not as clear-cut at the high school, and high schools really are feeling their way through this. But to their credit, I think that they will figure it out. But it's a whole different set of challenges. It's moving that expertise from a lot of the elementary schools into the high school teaching population, and then how do we effectively teach this to the high school students? So there's a lot of infrastructure and structure that needs to be adjusted.
And I see there is a phase two portion of this report that comes out in July of this year.
Yes, and we'll see. Of course, at that time, education is usually off the radar screen,
sure.
So we don't know who will pay attention to that then. Yeah, but that is the plan, uh-huh.
Well, depending on how the week goes, we may be paying attention to it, so expect a call back.
Absolutely. I'd be very glad to.
All right. Thanks for joining us. We appreciate your time.
It's my pleasure.
Steve Correa has been with us for the past hour. He is an associate professor of teacher education at St. Norbert College in De Pere. And for the past hour, we've been talking about test results that came out in the past week that were highly publicized, studies that have found gains in test assessments of students across the country in reading and math scores, and essentially found that those scores had risen substantially and since No Child Left Behind. And the question, though, was raised, is there a correlation between the inception of No Child Left Behind and the rising of these test scores? We've been talking about that for the past hour with our guest, and we've had a lot of calls, so thanks for joining us. If you would like a copy of the program, you can have one by calling the radio store. That number is toll-free, 800-747-7444. And when you call, ask for program 067B, as in boy. And don't forget that you can also listen to all of our programming online. Go to our website at WPR.org and look for our program archives listings. It's right near the top of the webpage, and you can find virtually all of the local programming that we produce here on Wisconsin Public Radio and listen to it on your home computer. The hour was produced by Carmen Jackson and Leo Duran. And we had on-air production this hour from Christina Taylor. I'm Gene Purcell, and I'm filling in this week for Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.